Hi everybody, I'm Scott Benson. I'm an alcoholic. And it's because of the grace of God, the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous and sponsorship that I've been sober since May 23rd of 1989. And I want to thank Wayne and the committee for asking me to come up here and share. It's quite a privilege and an honor to do this. We came up and we just had a great time. That bird is going to be in Peg's talk tomorrow. It's a bat. Well, they might not make it. That's good only. I like attention, but not unless I command it. So, we had a great time coming up here. There's 12 of us that came from Jamestown, we had a. You know, it's interesting. Being an Alcoholics Anonymous is. It's really a. It's an amazing time, and it's you know, we have conversations that you just can't have anywhere else. I mean, we covered podium-approved and non-podium-approved stuff. We covered, Brian, a newer member, explained how chestnut trees are planted. We're thinking that's a false story. He just wants us to like him. And we like him no matter what. And then Jim, who's with us, is the gentleman, Jeff, who was supposed to give this talk, wishes he could be here, but he had other things. But one of the guys he sponsors, Jim, gave us a tour of Deadwood. He used to live down here, and he said, as we're driving through town, he says, I got kicked out of that bar. That's the jail that I got food poisoning in. I'm sensing that under normal company, those aren't stories he freely shares. Dan has tried to be a good host. He called me ahead of time and asked me what I liked, and I said I liked coffee and chocolate, not chocolate coffee or coffee with chocolate in it, but coffee and chocolate. And so he hooked me up with his cup, and and he's been fun to get to know. My sponsor, I talked to my sponsor, Dick, and I asked him if he had any words of wisdom before I spoke, and he said, give him hell. And I'm just not sure if he's talking about Dan or the conference or sometimes you should ask for clarification from your sponsor, I've learned over time. But anyway, it's a real privilege to be here, and I don't do a bunch of speaking. Well, that's not true. I do a lot of talking in my head while other people are talking. But I don't do a lot of it. And I'm going to try my best to condense the four-hour version I had going in my head last night into a much shorter version. And we just had a great time coming. You know, you get out on the road and you're coming to the conference, and this is the first annual conference, so you're gonna set tradition, believe it or not. This weekend, there's gonna be some things that are just gonna stick, and people are gonna wanna keep doing them because they're fun and people stay sober. And I think that I've known it's a real privilege to be at the same conference with my sponsor and his wife, and I've known John and Cindy and Wayne and Gerard. And by the way, those of you who give Gerard a hard time, I want you to know you're not alone. We always did in my night. From the time he showed up at his first AA meeting wearing a big sombrero with his hostage in the car outside waiting on him. And a lot's changed in his life, so a lot's changed. Who'd have ever thought Gerard, slick, cool Gerard, would wind up being a watermelon farmer? You just never know what's going to happen when you get active in Alcoholics Anonymous. 10 years ago, Gerard, you said that when you asked what would happen if your life, if you stuck this deal out, I would have never been able to say watermelon farmer. You're going to be a watermelon farmer. You're going to be married and a kid. Anyway, so there's lots of memories, and I think that's why my mind was racing, you know, lots of memories. Lots of memories in Alcoholics Anonymous, a little bit about me, you know, I grew up in it was me and my mom, and my mom was a drinker, and we moved around a lot, and I always kind of had a complex with having red hair, and I had a chip on my shoulder, and AA, they used to call chips on shoulders resentments, but at that time it was just a chip on my shoulder. And I had this, just something inside me said that I was not as good as other people. Something inside me just said that I don't belong here. And that there was just something awkward about me. It seemed like, and of course, if you've been in Alcoholics Anonymous any amount of time, you hear people talk about that their insides didn't match other people's outsides. Now, I didn't know this at the time, but... you know, one thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that I had a lot of things that made me uncomfortable. Well, anything beyond the sandbox in the backyard made me uncomfortable. But the people in Alcoholics Anonymous who are like me have helped me walk through a lot of the uncomforts that I have. But at the time, I was just searching. You know, I just wanted to find my spot. And I secretly believed that people with blonde hair had it easier. It was just very apparent to me. People liked them easier. They didn't have to do as much to be cool. And people who, like, had a good time doing things, I didn't like those people either. And people who were athletic, didn't like them. And I kind of wanted to be the best at everything. And, of course, that's hard to do when you're only willing to, like, try it for about 10 minutes until it's uncomfortable. And so I was in a lot of activities, and I tried them, but ultimately I just always felt like there was something wrong with me, that fundamentally there was something wrong with me. I remember thinking I was adopted. I remember, you know, it's like my mother loved me, and she did the best job she could taking care of me. And, you know, she was working with the wounded child, but she did a lot of things to try to help me. You know, she helped me stay in sports, and she helped me do a lot of things, but nothing was ever good enough. And what ultimately changed my life, changed the course of my life, I didn't know it at the time, but when it came to drinking, I had good observations of it and bad observations of it. I knew, for example, that when my mom drank, you never really knew what was going to happen. I also knew that when her boyfriend drank, that he would bring stuff home, like motorcycles, and, you know, and so drinking to me wasn't all bad, and the observation of it. But when I had an opportunity to drink, it totally changed my life, and I didn't expect it. I remember very vividly, we're in another new town. We had a lot of moves, and I didn't know why we were moving when I was younger. I later found out, after my mom got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, to share a story, but she'd do something that embarrassed her at work, and so we'd move. And so I'm at another new town, and it's everybody who's known everybody their whole life, and then there's Scott. And like I said, I tried lots of things to just feel okay. I remember one time I'd moved from one school to another, and I changed my name to Stuart, because Stuart was the popular kid, and I thought, for sure, if I had the name Stuart, you're with me, right? He's popular there. Stuart, it's got to be the name. Well, I wound up with the name of Stewie. Other people did not cooperate with me on what my new name was going to be. And anyway, I kind of lost my train of thought. But I moved to this new town, and some people invited me to go to a party, and I showed up there, and I was awkward, and I didn't know if I should go or not. I was worried that maybe it was a trick, and they're going to pull some new kid at school prank on me, and all sorts of stuff was going through my mind. And we started drinking, and I started drinking, and something absolutely magical happened that changed the course of my life. And what ultimately happened was I went from feeling like I was totally disconnected to that I was connected with the people I was at with, and that I was okay where I was at. And I felt like I was one of those kids that never could pick up the beat, like in band or music. Like, I was a drummer, but the instructor instructed me not to actually hit the drum because I couldn't keep the beat. But he knew my mother had spent a lot of money buying the instrument, so she, you know, he's working with me the best he could. So, but I could feel the beat to my bones. I mean, I just, it was like, and I just felt comfortable. I seemed to, other people seemed to almost instantly like me. And I seemed to be able to say things I couldn't say before. I was in front of the bathroom mirror, and I was looking in the mirror, and I remember just almost getting teary-eyed because I'd never looked so good in my entire life. I mean, it was like, I'd always felt awkward and unattractive. I mean, I was the kid in school that people used to fight over me on who wasn't going to take me on their team. And I attribute that to red hair, of course, not attitude or chip on shoulder or anything like that. But, I mean, I just felt wonderful. And one side effect of that evening only is that later that night I found myself in the backyard crying that nobody loved me. And which wasn't the kind of attention I was looking for, trying to be manly and all. And I pedaled my bicycle home, which was my first drinking and driving incident. And I got home, and I passed out, and I woke up the next day. And I think now, looking in hindsight, I didn't know what was going on at the time. You know, it's kind of like sometimes when if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll hear people share. Generally, and they'll share about their life, and they'll talk about these sequence of events. Well, I didn't really know what was going around. I was just bouncing from one thing to the next thing. But I woke up that next morning with the obsession that alcoholics have, although I did not know it at the time. And the obsession is that somehow, someday, I'm going to control and enjoy my drinking. And what I woke up with that next morning, was I was going to do that again, but without the crying part, because that wasn't very cool. And I totally shifted the course of my life, and it seemed like any of the things that I did do well, it didn't seem like it was enough. You know, it never really seemed like it was enough. But when I drank, I always came alive. I always came alive. I can remember drinking and having hope, so much hope for how wonderful my life was going to be and how jealous everybody else was that they'd held me back my whole life. And I mean, everything became alive for me, and I think in hindsight that drinking for me probably prevented a teenage suicide, because what baffled me about drinking and what baffled me about being sober is that I would, and of course when I started drinking on the weekends because that's what everybody else did, on Monday I would go back to school and I would think, why can't I be that guy I was on Friday night or Saturday night? Why is it that, you know, I'm the kind of guy, I'm walking through school and someone I know looks at me, but I've got this inferiority complex. I secretly believe people don't like me, they just tolerate me. So I got this running through my head, and I don't know what to do, and I'm thinking, why can't I say hi, or why can't I do something, why can't I just be normal, and why can't I be the guy I was on Friday or Saturday night? And my mind would just race. And I would go out drinking again, and I'd have a good time. And if you're like me, it just makes sense that why do things that are uncomfortable? I mean, if I can drink and have comfort, and I remember early on I had warnings that I should not drink. One, I'd had a mother who'd been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous from the time I can remember. And so I kind of had known that I probably shouldn't drink. You know, I remember hearing about that it was, you know, hereditary, and I remember... I remember kind of being at treatment centers. I remember going and visiting my mom, happened to sail on a ferry. It was when we were in Washington, which was a cool experience for me, except the fact that we'd sailed on this ferry, and I had to see my mom, who was going to be in treatment for 90 days. And I didn't understand that at that time, but as I got older, I began to see that, you know, just watching hers. And I never thought that... I never wanted to be an alcoholic. I just wanted to be okay. I just wanted to live a good life. I wanted to be like other people. And I was ultimately going down the same path my mother was, but probably on an escalated uh, or a, a faster journey because of that. Because my mom would go through these bouts that when she got sober, everybody was getting sober. And so, the first time I was in treatment, I had gotten my first DUI at 14. I thought I was the first person in the history of mankind to ever get a DUI at 14. I remember just feeling terrible about that. But at the same token, I remember thinking it could happen to anybody. They pick on me. They know my car. I've got red hair. It's all these other things. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that I was drunk driving, the drunk driving charge. It has to do with all these other things. And my mind worked like that, so when I did have consequences, I remember one time drinking, and I came out of a blackout. I'm driving. It's my car. I know it's my car because the stereo wires are hanging down. I did things just enough. I'm sitting next to some guy who I don't know. Never met him in my life, but I've gained in 2 minutes that his wife just gave birth to a baby at the hospital, yet he's with me. And we got a carload of boat equipment. We got boat equipment coming out of every window of this car, and I smell like gasoline. And you know what I said to myself? I said to myself, Scott, I am never, ever drinking Mad Dog 2020 again. That's what I got out of that lesson. And because I tended to drink with people who drank like me, and I think that, so it just seemed normal. You know, there was always someone that was a little bit crazier than me that did a little bit, you know, and so it just kind of seemed normal. I just ran with the people that drank like I did. I was also the type of person that when I was drinking, it freed me, and so I did a lot of experimenting when I was drinking. And what I mean by that, like, I remember one time being at a party and there was a cat box under the sink, and I just got this idea that maybe I wanted to know exactly how much pee a cat box can hold. How much can it really? Well, that little project led to a baseball bat and me not having a front tooth. But it was them, mind you. They just didn't know how to take a joke. Anyway, but I would have these conversations with myself that I shouldn't drink so much. I'm going to do this. And I'm the kind of guy that I'm self-centered. And I didn't know I was self-centered, but I'm very self-centered. And so I'm always thinking about what other people are thinking of me. I'm the kind of guy that I take everything personal. And so if I go into a convenience store and the clerk is rude to me, it doesn't dawn on me. Maybe they're just having a bad day. What it dawns on me is they're picking on me and I'm never going to 7-Eleven again. At the same token, if I go to a convenience store and the clerk is nice to me and she seems to go out of her way to tell me where the coffee is and kind of nice, ask me how my day is, I think she loves me. It's evident. Why else would she be nice to me? Because I wasn't. You know, it was my first sponsor, the man that really changed my life. I remember when I first met him, he would invite me out for coffee and we'd go to coffee, and I always thought he was a hound dog. Because he'd always flirt with the waitresses, and I thought he was trying to show me how cool he was. And I didn't like blonde-haired, blue-eyed people, and he was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy, and he was flirting with the waitresses. What I discovered as I got to know him is that he was kind to all the waitresses, whether they were young, old, single, etc., because he'd had this idea that he just wanted to be nice, and I'd mistaken being nice and kind for always wanting something, because that's how I operated. I didn't act nice unless you had something I wanted. And that was how I was. And I didn't think anything was abnormal about it. I wouldn't share it with someone because it'd sound bad, but that's how I felt. And anyway, so I'm kind of bumping along and like I said, I always got in trouble when I drank and legally that is, and amongst other things. And so I wound up in treatment. I'd learned from my mom that if you went to treatment, you would get out of trouble. And so I began my seven journeys to treatment. And after the second one, I was pretty good at being the junior counselor and straightening other people out. But I would go to treatment, And they would pile on heaps of evidence as to why I shouldn't drink. I mean, just heaps of evidence that it is not safe for you to drink, Scott. And I would think to myself initially, you don't understand. I'm not drinking because I'm trying to wind up at 3 in the morning at my girlfriend's house proclaiming my love to her. That's not why I'm drinking. I'm drinking so I can be okay. I'm drinking so I can live. But I couldn't explain it that way, and so I would just say, leave me alone, you're picking on me. You're just like people in school, you're just like the police, you're just picking on me. But by the end of treatment, I would have the idea that I probably shouldn't drink. They'd convince me I shouldn't drink. And they would also say, hey, if you want to stay sober, go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was a place that you went to. It was meetings. It was older people at meetings. It was people who'd hung up the six-pack, and it was their dying place. And so I would go to meetings for a little while, and I would begin to, what our book describes, is become restless, irritable, and discontent. Because when you first get sober, you get attaboys. Oh, boy, it's great you're sober. Don't you feel wonderful? Yes, I feel just wonderful. You know, because that's the correct answer. You can't tell somebody that your life is on the outside reasonably manageable. You know, they worked it out for you to get back into school. You got your job back. Mom's let you into the house. Everything is in line. Everything's managed well. So when people ask, when all your ducks on the outside look good and people say, don't you just feel grateful? You've got to say, well, yes, it's just wonderful. But inside, I know it ain't enough. It is not enough, and I would begin to slowly go crazy. I mean, I would slowly go where I would become more sensitive. I would become, I'm the kind of guy, I take things so personal that if someone's staring at me at a restaurant, I'll look at them and I'll begin to get uncomfortable. I'll think, what are they staring at? Do I have something on me? Is it my zipper? Is it my shoes? It's got to be the red hair. It's this, it's that. And all these things will go through my head, and I'll be thinking, they don't like me. Why don't people like me? And I'll go into all these stories into my head. And the dude could be having some stroke, and I'm taking it personal. And so I begin to just get sensitive, and I can't explain it, but something happens where it makes sense. It makes sense. Hey, if it's warm, grain belt beer, at home in my bedroom, it can't possibly be dangerous. And to jump ahead, to make a short drinking story longer, to jump ahead... At the end of my drinking, the last 6 months of my drinking went like this. I was working. I'd been moved from a prep cook to a dishwasher, which really pissed me off. And I had my dead aunt's purple Impala that I'd inherited, not because I was a wonderful nephew, but by default of I needed it. And I was trying to work, and I was trying to not to drink. And what would happen is I'd get up in the morning, I would race to work. And I would be late, and someone would jump on me, and I'd think to myself, you don't understand, I didn't mean to be late, it just happened again, I can't explain it, get off my back, let me go and do my dishes, and I would do, I'd begin to do my job, and I'd start thinking, and I'd think, and I'd say to myself, I'm not going to drink today, I used to be able to not drink for a week or two or three when I'd get out of treatment, I'm just not going to drink for, just today, just, I need a break, and I would go and I'd be sweating, you know, I had so much booze. It wasn't that hot in back doing dishes when you're wet. It just, I had booze coming out of my pores. And I would think to myself, you know, that waitress will never go out with me. Not a loser like me. I always felt like people looked at me like I was a loser, but I began to feel like one. And I remember thinking, she'll never go out with me. She'd never go. I'm a loser. I can't even barely hold a job doing dishes. And I would think, and what would happen by the time I would get off work is I would think, I'm just going to have a few. And I'd go back to my room, and I would start drinking. And booze, alcohol would do for me what it always did. I would begin to sense that it's going to be okay. You know, I would just get that, and I would start to drink, and I would think about all the things I was going to do. I was going to start a restaurant, and I was going to run the guy who was currently hiring me out of business for treating me so bad. And that waitress that I never did ask out, but she wouldn't go out with me anyway. I'm going to roll in a Benz someday and not give her a ride. I would keep drinking, and I would wake up to the alarm, and I would be late, and it was the same cycle. And what ultimately happened is I baited out of my apartment one day and got a DUI, go figure. And I wound up in treatment one more time, and I went through treatment, and it was kind of the same deal. But what had happened was is I was pending trial for a DUI, and so I got back home, and my aunt said I could live with her, but I needed to go to meetings, so I started going to meetings. And what happened was is some guys, one of which was a gentleman by the name of Russ, but five guys got up at a clubhouse, and they shared their story. And they blew me away because I'd never heard people have fun in sobriety. And they shared in a general way what they were like, what happened, what they're like now, and their lives, how their lives had gotten better. And one of them became my sponsor. And he spotted me. I don't know how he spotted me. I don't know if it was the moccasins up to my knees, the chip on my shoulder, the real long red hair. I'm not sure. But he spotted me, and he came up to me, and he got my phone number. And he was a cigarette salesman, Camel. I think that's cursed me, but it also blessed me getting to know him. But he got my phone number, and I didn't know it at the time, but he went out of town for 10 days for a sales trip or something. And he just changed sponsors, and his sponsor had told him, Scott, stop coming to Fargo, North Dakota. You live in Minot, North Dakota. You stay up there, and you work with new people. That direction that he got from his sponsor changed my life and the two other guys that he worked with there. And then he moved on 2 years later. But anyway, I was one of those guys, and he came back from this trip. Now, what had happened in those 10 days that I knew I had court I was going to, and I had all these things, and I was going to meetings, and I couldn't stand anymore, and I drank. And it was the same thing. It was the exact same thing. And I was on my way out to do it again, literally on my way out the door, and Scott called me. He says, hey, what are you doing? Well, you're not going to say, well, I'm on my way to drink. That'd sound bad, right? From a guy that you'd met in AA. I said, well, nothing, just kind of hanging out. He says, you want to go to have coffee? I thought, sure. I said, yeah, I'll go. So I'll come pick you up. You probably don't have a license. And so he came and picked me up. And I don't know, that's what I heard. I don't know that's what he said, but that's what I heard. And he shared his story with me at Perkins, and it changed my life. I thought, this guy's just like me. Felt like I felt sober. Alcohol did the same thing for him that it did for me. I couldn't stop. I was the kind of guy, when I'd start drinking, I would grab two or three, and I would hide them behind the fridge, or I would hide them under the seat of my car because I didn't want to run out. Now, at the time, I would have told you it's because I drank with pigs. You got to get your own. But the reality it was, I was one of those guys at midnight went mad to get more booze. And he described that, and he described how he grew up, and he grew up in a more dysfunctional home than I was, so out was my self-pity. And but his home was really crazy. I mean, he had two older brothers that picked on him all the time. He talked about his brother slamming his head through sheetrock and his story. He'd gotten sober. His brother had lied to him to get him sober by telling him that he had a job for him. And come on up. And that began the course of changing his life. And anyway, he began to work with me. He'd been to call me, and he started to kind of just show me this deal. And he got me to do things that nobody else had ever been able to get me to do. I'd been sentenced to AA and wouldn't go, and yet he got me to go to tons of meetings. One of the first meetings I went to, he'd committed. This is so strange to me, but he said, we got to go out to the Minot Air Force Base, because I committed with a guy to start a book study up there, and I told him I'd go up there for a year. And I'm the kind of guy that I'm a maybe guy. Like, hey, you want to go to the movies Saturday night? Maybe. Maybe I want to go. Maybe. What I'm really saying is I might go. Why don't you hang 10 and hold on me? And if I don't find anything better to do, I'll go to the movie with you. Now, if you go without me, I'll probably be offended. But all the same, you know, I mean, it was always about me. And that's the kind of friends I had, which is why I didn't have any when I got sober. All I had was this cigarette salesman that would call me and take me to meetings. And he got me active in Alcoholics Anonymous, and his sponsor had sat three of us down, three guys that he sponsored. And one of the things that was very profound on me is that he said, a year from now, two of you are going to be drunk. And I said, oh, I'm screwed because Mark's got this deal. I'm a screw off. I'm never going to make it. I better not take this deal for granted. I'm going to be the one that makes it for a change. And like you said, I just wanted to kind of impress this guy. He liked me. I wanted to impress him, or he seemed like he liked me. Now, I thought if he really knew me, he wouldn't like me. But anyway, we started going to a lot of meetings, and he, by example, I remember one time, everybody signed up to speak at the state hospital. I don't want to speak at the state hospital. I've been there. I don't want to speak there. I've been there. I've been there. I was released and been there a week later. I don't want to go to the state hospital. But there's all these names on the club, on the wall at the clubhouse to go, and we were supposed to show up at like Saturday, and he talked me into going, and I show up, and it was just me and him. I said, oh, I guess we're not going. He says, no, we're going. I said, well, no one else is going. He says, I don't care. My sobriety ain't based on no one else. I'm going to do what I said I'm going to do. He got on the phone, called his sponsor, and a bunch of guys from Fargo Medicine, Jamestown. And we spoke at the state hospital, and they let me out. So it was a nice thing. And he got me active in service, which I don't know. I'm still involved in service, and I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse. But because that's what he did where he got sober, and he started a meeting, and we started this meeting called the Minot Thursday Night Group, and it's still going today. 6 months later, my mother got sober. My mother, the one who slipped in and out of AA. My sponsor, one of the things my sponsor had told me is that he talked about when he would go back to Iowa, his mom would say, this is my son Scott. His name was Scott, by the way, so I'm not like talking about myself. But his name is Scott, and this is the son I've been telling you about. And I remember thinking, the only thing I have accomplished in my life is growing my hair long. That's the only thing my mother's got to tell somebody about her son, her only son, who questioned whether I was even her son. Like she wouldn't know. And one of the real damages I did when I was out there was that I made my mother feel bad that I didn't have a father. And because I really thought that if I'd had, you know, like Will, on the way down, one of the things, you know, Will said, well, in 1982, if the coach had put me in the fourth quarter, things would be different today. And, you know, I always thought that that's why I was so disconnected from other people. That's why, is because I had red hair and didn't know who my father was. That's why I'm disconnected. That's why I'm so screwed up. And here across the table at Perkins in Minot, North Dakota, was a guy who was just like me. And he had a father and a mother. He felt the same way I'd felt. It blew me away. One of the things that later on after I'd gotten sober, the person who was supposed to speak here, he was a guy was in the same class I was in high school. Of course, I graduated through alternative school. You know, he was the captain of the football team. Everybody liked him. He's funny. I was the one making fun of those guys. Anyway, with the other kids with the chip on their shoulder. But I remember when he came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and here was a guy who really came from a normal family. And I remember I was sponsoring this guy and Jeff at that time. And I remember talking to my sponsor, I don't think I can help this guy. People like him. He's got two normal parents. I met his mom. She got me cookies for helping him. You know, and it was like, I can't imagine, here's this guy who looks like he's got, well, of course, after you talk to him for 3 minutes, it was apparent he was just like me too. He had all these things in life that I thought if I only had a father, and if I had, you know, if I was cooler, if I was this, if I could do this better, that I'd be okay. That's what drinking did for me. It filled those holes, and he had the same holes. He had the same holes, and it was like I knew. With my first sponsor, I knew I identified with him. And I remember he started getting me into the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. He'd ask me some things. I'd been in and out of AA. And he'd said, have you ever really had a sponsor? And I said, no. He says, he ever really got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous? Because I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was about attending meetings. I did not realize it was a fellowship of men and women. I did not realize the backbone of Alcoholics Anonymous was one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. I always had tried to identify with people's consequences of drinking, which consequences vary. But how someone feels, that obsession that somehow, some way I can control my drinking and that absolute inability to stop once I start, that's what we all got in common. And that curse that we have, the curse is sobriety, that I'm uncomfortable and I can't stay sober. So my problem isn't so much stopping drinking out of treatment, it's staying that way. And I didn't know it at the time, but my sponsor was instilling in me the things that would keep me in good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous to this day. And if I'd have had my way, I'd have missed it all. I'd have missed right now. Last night at the meeting at my home group, the gentleman who was sponsoring it was a grand pigeon of mine. And the first 10-minute speaker was a great, and then it was like all these people I knew well in Alcoholics Anonymous are a part of my life. I've been able to be a part of people's lives. I was the kind of guy that I had a friend for 3 months and then he moved on. And here I've been able, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to keep friendships with people, to have a relationship with people, and I'm a guy who can't do relationships because I'm too selfish. I'm just too selfish to share. You know, I'm the guy who took his ball and went home and threw a rock at the other kids. I'm not one who, you know, looking back at my whole history in school was Scott does not play well with others. And anyway, so I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and something happened, and that my sponsor encouraged me to go to school. I didn't want to go to school. I sucked at school. Nobody liked me at school. I wasn't cool. I don't want to go to college. I didn't do well in high school. I'm not going to college. But he convinced me to go, and I'm one of these guys. He said, now, why don't you just take some classes, see what you like, go for a couple years, pick your major, go on, you know, after you get kind of your feel for college. And so I started going to school, and I didn't listen to him, of course, so I wound up having, I think I had about, I don't know, 20 majors before I graduated. But he helped me in that, because what would happen was I'd start out, just like a lot of things, I'd start out of the gate good. I'm going to do this. I can do this. Other people are doing it. I can do it. And then I would start not showing up for class. And then the fear would kick in. The fear. I can't do this. I don't really want to go to school. My sponsor pushed me into it anyway. And I would begin to, and I would call my sponsor and he'd say, you haven't been to class, have you? Why don't you go back to class before you quit school and see how it goes? And I'd go back to class. And I learned a lot from him. He told me some things that I think you have to have a home group. That's been my experience, is that having a home group has been phenomenal. It's a place where I've had jobs in my home group. I've shown up early. I've stayed late. I've watched other people's lives change right in front of me. I watched my mother come into Alcoholics Anonymous 6 months after me, get a sponsor, and begin to change her life. My mother was a waitress my whole life because she thought that's all she could do. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And I watched the people in Alcoholics Anonymous encourage my mother to become a lady. My mother was a rough. My mother's tough. I'm a wimp. My mother is tough. She's tough. And I watched her become a lady in Alcoholics Anonymous. I watched her go to school. My mother, I used to visit in jail. She wanted to be involved in corrections. You know, go figure, alcoholics, jail. You want to work in the same place you've been, I suppose, or something. But anyway, because you can do it better, right? More compassion. But anyway, my mother said, I think I'd like to be involved in law enforcement. And so one of the guys in the group said, go apply at the jail. Well, they'll never hire me at the jail. I got, you know, drug charges, DUIs, or DWIs at that time. And but she applied and she got this job. Here's my mother working at the jail in Alcoholics Anonymous, going to college, and watching my mother's life change right before me was absolutely a blessing that I would have missed if I'd have got my way. And, of course, she eventually became a bookmobile bookmobile librarian because she identified with inmates more than guards. But my life has changed gradually, you know, and I've had ups and downs. I just heard Clancy talking about it, but my life is like a pendulum. In that he was talking about, like, when you're drinking, your life's going down, and you got the sways of life. Like, I would have success where I was a state champion in boxing, you know, and then I'd wind up in Glen Burn in some wheat field. And then I was just riding her down, and I wasn't aware of it. And I got sober, and that same pendulum is in effect where sometimes I can't see my life changing because of the sways of life. You know, I graduate from school. I'm sponsoring myself, you know, and all these different things are going on. You know, one of my experiences, the reason I have Dick as a sponsor, Dick has helped me immensely. You know, my sponsor directed me to, there's so much to share in Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's so many good times and so many, there's so many people that have helped me that have just tremendously impacted my life. But I was traveling for a job, and my sponsor at that time directed me to go to the meeting that Dick goes to, the Foxhall meeting. I didn't know what it was, but I went there, and their future daughter-in-law got me to the meeting. I didn't know that at the time. And when I walked into that meeting, I didn't know who Dick was, but I knew instantly who he was. And I interviewed him. And a couple days later, I had the sponsor interview. I didn't really pick my first sponsor. He just worked with me. You know, sometimes people wait, and you hear it talked about. Jeff always talks about it a lot. But sometimes you want to sponsor people, then you'll help them. And what my experience has been is you work with people, and then sometimes you wind up eventually sponsoring them. And that's what my sponsor did with me, and that's how I usually wind up with the guys I sponsor as I work with them. I call them, and I invite them for meetings, and I try to identify with them. You know, when I was newer, I didn't. When I was newer, I'd say, you got to do this, you got to do that. And they'd say, well, I'm not like you only. I don't have your problem, because I wouldn't identify with them. I just tell them the solution. And, of course, the solution doesn't mean anything if you don't have the same problem. And But one of the things that I'd gotten the basics of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was working with guys, and I'd went through the steps and the best I could at that time. But something wasn't right. I knew Alcoholics Anonymous worked for the people that I sponsored because I could see it in their life. But I was starting to think it didn't work for me. Now, keep in mind, at this time, I wasn't talking to my sponsor about the bad things. I was just telling him about the good things. Because I was covering the bad things on myself. I just figured, well, at 4 years of sobriety, this shouldn't be happening, so I'll just pretend it's not and not tell them. I'll just tell them the good things. I'm graduating from college, BA in economics. And at the same token, I'm filing bankruptcy. And nobody knows it. Because you see, at 4 years, you should be a millionaire, right? You shouldn't be spending more money than you make, right? And and of course I didn't know it at the time. You know, sometimes you hear things in Alcoholics Anonymous and all I can do is share my experience. All I can do is share my experience because that's all I got. And you can't argue with my experience, good, bad, or indifferent. But what happened was I felt terribly bad about that. And I didn't realize the spiritual consequences of that. But anyway, I got Dick as a sponsor because I knew AA worked, and I knew it worked for the guys I sponsored because they were doing it like they were supposed to. They're talking to their sponsor, they're listening to me, they're going through the steps, they were doing a lot of things, but I wasn't. Not that my sponsor wasn't helpful to me, but I wasn't talking to him because I wanted to look good. And anyway, I got Dick as a sponsor, and we started from scratch. It's like, here's all the things I'm doing. You know, he had me write a letter, and he clarified on that one. He said, I don't want a book. I want it brief and to the point. And I wrote him this letter, and he didn't kick me out of AA. And I was worried. You know, I thought, well, someone's been sober a long time. Maybe they could say, well, you really shouldn't be here. You know, I've heard a lot of inventories, and you're the one who really shouldn't be. He didn't say that. He said, we'll work on these things. We'll work on these things. And the one thing I discovered about that is that I didn't know that I would be like a magnet to anyone who's having money troubles after that. What I discovered was is that it happened, and I'd filed bankruptcy, and I just felt terrible about it. And I always feel bad because that didn't seem like what you should do. And I'd always had money problems, and I thought they were fixed by getting a good job and making a lot of money. What I discovered was you just spend a lot. So 2 years after that, I'd gotten Dick as a sponsor when I was 6 years sober. So nobody knew some of the things. I was doing a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was covering a lot of things on my own. So when I was 6 years sober, now not only had I gotten in trouble or I'd filed bankruptcy when I was 4 years sober, but now I'm 6 years sober and I got a bunch of debt on my mother's credit cards because I hadn't learned anything. And what I began is I begin to I got current with Dick, and I began to make some financial amends that I'd never made. Meaning, I'd never made Scotty's Drive-In's one, for example, that I it was a good man, and he was good to me. He helped me buy a van. I mean, how many employers do you know that will help you buy a vehicle? And I stole from him, and I always felt bad about that. And I went to him, and I said, even though it looks like I'm doing well, I'm not, but I stole from you. And I'm going to start paying you $25 every other week until it's paid off. And I begin doing that. And I begin to, I had borrowed money from my grandmother on false pretenses as well, and I started paying her. And I begin to change some of the things I was doing. And it was kind of an ego-smashing blow. And what I discovered is that today, looking in hindsight, there's things you can't do to change the past, and I would make amends to that if I can. But it takes a little bit out of my character today. And so, for example, when I work with guys that are at that point, I'm perhaps lucky that they come and say, "Well, I think I should, you know, file bankruptcy." I can tell them my experience on it, that I did it, and it's something that lives with me to this day, and it's something that bothers me to this day, but I would be willing to make it right if I could. But of course, a lot of agencies won't take amends because I've tried to make them to some of those Discover card. Anyway, I take money from someone who stole it from me, but they don't apparently. But anyway, so a lot's changed in my life, and I think I'm getting near the end of my time. But I think that I had this idea that even in sobriety, that if I only managed well, I'd be okay. If I got a good her and a good job and a good this. And what I discovered is just like anything, that it's important that I practice the principles in Alcoholics Anonymous and all my affairs on a daily basis. And sometimes I do that real well, and sometimes I don't. And I have a home group and I have a sponsor, and I try to carry the message to other alcoholics. And my life has done this. You know, it's had that pendulum. I've had a lot of good things happen in my sobriety, and I was able to I'd always had trouble with women. With some help from Dick, he explained that if I maybe act better, I'll attract better. And he is a little, well, anyway. And so I wound up meeting my wife, and today my life is never how I would have ever envisioned it. I have five children in my life today. I have a beautiful wife. We were talking. My mother is moving to Jamestown, and which is going to be great because I haven't lived in the same town as my mother since I was 3 years sober. And so I'm excited to go to Alcoholics Anonymous with my mother. And she's coming down for the grandkids. That's what she says. I know it's for me, but but they're packing her up. And my son seen a picture of his father with long hair. And he wanted to know if he could have long hair. He also wanted to know if there's any pictures of me with makeup or a dress. My oldest daughter, when I was a couple years sober, I discovered I was a father. I didn't know it. It was a blood test thing, and I just didn't know. And I was going to run. I wasn't going to pay that child support because if I couldn't actually help the mother spend it, seemed to me. And my sponsor said surrender to that idea. Surrender that idea. And of course, I had the ideal too, is that I wasn't going to have a relationship with her because she'd search me out someday, is what I said to him. And what happened was, is I surrendered to the ideal I was going to have to pay child support. Because what I thought is, I'm not going to be able to go to school, and I'm not going to be able to have this, and I'm not going to be able to have this, and I'm not going to be able to have this. I didn't dawn on me that maybe I should be responsible for my behavior, something I'd never done. Someone always gave me a free pass. And so I just surrendered that ideal I was going to pay child support no matter what. And I started doing that, and then, when she was a couple years old, I didn't know about her until she was about a year and a half old, and when she was probably about 2.5 years old, something had happened where, I wanted to see her, and I began a relationship with her. And it was always awkward because I felt bad because I didn't want her initially. So I always felt guilty about that. I should just, see her when I can. And I surrendered to the ideal I was going to let Mom call the shots. And if I thought that Katie needed something extra, I wouldn't buy it for her, send it home with her. I'd just give it to her mom because who cares who gets the credit? You people, Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that. And that helped me have a good relationship with her. And the other thing my sponsor had suggested is he said, you be the best father you can be from where you're at. And I was traveling, so I started sending her postcards. Little things, right? Little actions is what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when she was about 12 years old, I was at her house, and she had some albums. And she had two albums of 500 postcards that I'd sent her Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. And they were, real, even deep, I'm shallow. And so they were just, hi, Katie, hope you're having a good week, love, Dad. And I'd call her because one of the things with my mother is my mother always wanted me to be happy and wanted to know what was going on in my life. So I got in the habit of calling my mother every Sunday and not needing anything. And it was good not to need anything from my mother because I had my sponsor. That same daughter, of course, she lives with me now in Shannon, and she is managed to accumulate a couple of minor in consumptions last summer, and through a process of events, she's living with us, and she's been coming. Her first AA conference, she's 5 years old, and she's sitting next to the gentleman who was supposed to speak tonight, Jeff. And after the speaker got done, Katie leaned over to Jeff and said, you know what I want to do when I get older? And Jeff says, what, Katie? She says, I want to drink beer. That's what she got out of her first AA conference. And she's been coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and she's been coming to our meeting because she's very comfortable with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. She's known all my friends. She's known the people in AA is funny and tragic and emotional. By the way, I'm so self-focused on the first aid job. Is that physical first aid or emotional too? Are you covering both? But it's just, it's a blessing to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. My plan for myself, by the way, why I would have missed it all, I would have missed my beautiful wife, my 5 children, and my sponsor, and my sponsor's wife, and many, many good experiences is because my solution for my alcoholism was once I got off probation, I was going to move to California, going to dye my hair blonde, and I was going to live on the beach. And thank God that didn't happen because I think I would have probably died. The way I drank and the way I lived, I would have died or someone would have killed me because I had a mouth too when I drank, go figure. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the example of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, that has not been the case. And, tonight I'm honored to be asked to come in and share a little of my experience, strength, and hope. And if you're new, I would encourage you to get a sponsor. If you don't have one this weekend, you can find one here. There's lots of great people here. There are lots of great people here. They're human beings only. So you're going to see snits. You're going to see them. We always, when we go to conferences, we talk about who's going to get the SNIT Award and who's going to get the John Wayne Award. The SNIT Award is, the emotional collapse when you're not getting your way. The John Wayne Award is self-will, like when you, for example, if Marv loses it something and goes and sits on that can in the center of the lake and doesn't want to play with anyone. That'd be the John Wayne Award. But anyway, thank you for my life.